And you're either at the Puritan back room or Key West. Which is it?
I could hit the Puritan with a rock from my home.
Oh.
But I'm home.
are you going out? What are you doing? Are you completely self-isolating?
No, I go to the museum. It's a 15,000 square foot space, and only one of us is there at a time. So we're able to isolate simply through that general proximity.
I love the fact that, and I didn't realize that this was actually in the paper on the 15th. It just came to me that, oh my God, John Clayton would have some great stories about the pandemic of 1918. And considering that it took over a month for states to start having non-essential businesses close for COVID-19, the Manchester Board of Health took action pretty quickly. Amazing when you consider there wasn't a lot of knowledge that there is today.
The first case in Manchester was reported in the Union Leader on September 16th of 1918. But in hindsight, people discovered that we already had had our first victim, a gentleman who had passed away before it was known that it was in the city. And in less than a week, the city health department, which is led by Anna Thomas today, ordered the closure of all schools, and ultimately the mills in Manchester were closed because they feared that proximity was one of the carrying factors in the Spanish influenza.
I didn't realize that there was that much knowledge about this even 100 years ago. Did it surprise you at all?
It really did, because, in researching the story, I was simply too young to have heard stories about this epidemic that hit all of the country, not just the world, in fact, not just Manchester. But my local perspective was such that to learn that 527 people died in this small city in the space of 3 months gives you an idea of the impact this had locally.
You know, John, I'm struck by the parallels in your story with what is happening today, right down to making personal protective equipment from other product materials like they did here in the Manchester mills.
Yeah, the Union Leader actually published a story telling people how to make their own gauze masks. They suggested 8 layers of gauze, 8x to completely cover your mouth and nose, and people were doing those home remedies just as folks are mustering today to make this protective equipment for medical workers.
Of course, there was no internet in 1918, but Manchester still had a 24-hour telephone hotline, right?
The health department itself went to a 24-hour schedule just so they could respond to any calls. The number to dial was 312, back when most homes had 3-digit phone numbers. And that, again, is those who had phones. A lot of people did not have phones. There was really no ambulance service as such back in that era, so the mayor of Manchester, Moisey Barrett, was petitioning automobile owners to volunteer their cars to transport the sick and ill to the hospitals.
Weren't even some of the furniture stores pressed into service trying to get enough beds because there weren't nearly enough in the hospitals?
Within a week of the outbreak, that was September 16 again, every single hospital bed in Manchester was taken. So as is happening with the Mercy ship right now, as is happening with the ventilator tents they're building in Central Park in New York, the mayor petitioned different venues to open as areas to care for the sick. So the Knights of Columbus Hall, the Circle National Club, and private homes were solicited to take patients in, and to occupy those spaces, the mayor needed beds. So we brought all the furniture dealers in Manchester into the city hall and made pleas for them to donate beds for the sick.
So, John, how did the Spanish flu compare to COVID-19 in terms of the symptoms?
They were similar to a degree. There's a horrific description of the epidemic of 1918 by a doctor. First, there's a chill, then a fever with a temperature from 101 to 103, headache, backache, reddening and running of the eyes, pains and aches of the body, and general prostration. And persons thus attacked, where it was recommended they go home immediately and lay down in bed.
Mm. About 100 years ago, science isn't what it is today. I'm kind of curious at some of the causes you uncovered as to why they thought then that the pandemic came to be.
It was a remarkable mix of conspiracy theories mixed in with the occasional fact. The Great War was coming to an end, and there were those who believed it was the soldiers coming back from Europe who had contracted the disease and were spreading it in the mud on their boots and anything else you can imagine. There was a conspiracy theory that said that Bayer aspirin, which was a German-manufactured product, was being used to poison the American people as preposterous as it could. There was a lull in November of that year when cases seemed to abate, and today we would know this as the waves they're talking about. And people actually attributed to the signing of the armistice on November 11 that was the reason that the virus began to abate. So there was no shortage of, you know, scientific fact and speculation and conspiracy theories back then. And we're hearing some of those boogeyman stories again now in this present age.
So you wrote this story kind of looking back that I think was published in the Union Leader in 2008. And you didn't really have any template for a story like this yet. When I looked at it, John, it reads like 2020 if you just substitute the names and the technology from 1918.
And like you, you know, I was surprised to see it in the paper. My friends at the Union Leader called and asked permission to republish my piece. And, of course, I was happy to have it out there. But they also said, you know, this is not meant to scare you, but it's meant to make you aware of what could possibly happen because it has happened before. So, you know, there's a lesson to be learned from the past. That's my mantra always. And the story bears that out.
He is the most interesting man in New Hampshire, ladies and gentlemen. Executive Director of the Manchester Historic Association and former award-winning columnist for the Union Leader. That's why we'd like to have him on. I don't need an excuse, but I just love to have John Clayton on every couple months. You can go back through the archives on the 15th of March, right?
Correct, March 15th of this year. And it ran on the front of the life section, and I take that as a positive sign.
And with that, we'll wish you a good day. Stay safe. Can't wait for the museum to open again as things get better. Thank you, John Clayton.
Thank you, Michael.